Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hey, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Welcome to the Chuck Bonnywell and Julie Hayden Show, the Chuck and Julie Show, Truth Straight Up. Chuck had a meeting earlier. He is somewhere around the world headquarters here. He'll be joining us in a second. The show brought to you today by AmericasCitizenPress.com. That's AmericasCitizenPress.com. Great conservative website, along with Denver Cinegenics and Dr. Julie McCallan. We're going to be a couple guests today. Carl Honegger, we're going to bring him here up here in a second. And also John Conlon. We've had him on before. He has a great column up in American Thinker where he talks about all the ways that they're experimenting on our kids in school, the kind of stuff that would never happen in a business or on adults, but they're doing it to our kids. So we're going to talk to him about that. But let me go ahead and bring Carl up. Carl has got a great column, or I guess editorial, up at mycoloradogop.org, basically part of the effort to help Coloradans save the Republican Party. Here comes Chuck. So Carl, hey, thank you for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I really appreciate it because I had paid attention after, I think it was 2018 when, or I guess 2017, was when the original vote was to open up the Republican primaries to unaffiliated voters. And I had a hint that maybe it was possible that with this process, there was going to be a lot more money. There's a lot more money spent on ads. And when I started to see some information come out about this organization called Unite America, Unite Colorado, it really seemed like somebody needed to dig deeper and to really explore the influence of this. And what I discovered was that it was dark money.
Before we go into that, Carl, could you just tell folks about yourself and your background?
Oh, totally. So I am an accountant. I work for a tech-enabled healthcare company, and I grew up here in Colorado. I am the treasurer of the Brimfield County Republican Party.
That's not an easy task to have these days.
Well, we're a pretty small county, but we're definitely, I'm a former candidate for city council there in Brimfield, and we're definitely trying to win back for freedom and choice for our local government. So I'm also on the board of the Colorado Union of Taxpayers.
Sure. So you started to look into Unite America and what they're up to. And what I want to do, because so much of, and anybody, look, everybody's got to read Blueprint 3.0. You just have to read it if you want to understand anything. And Carl has done an extraordinary job of researching and find out everybody's a player behind it. You can get it at My Colorado GOP. That's our kind of state.
GOP.org.
My Colorado GOP.org. Or where is it? Where's the official? Who's the publisher of the article, Carl?
It was on Free State Colorado.
Free State Colorado. So you can get, you can either, let me finish this out. But I don't want to go too far into the background of Unite Colorado, because we could do a five-hour show with you, Carl. We really could.
Sure.
You've done such a great job. But I want to get to the point right away that what people don't realize is that the majority of money in many Colorado races, Republican primary races, is from Catherine Murdoch, a New York City progressive Clinton supporter,
Democrat,
who's the daughter-in-law of Rupert Murdoch, who does Fox, but she herself and her husband James are very far left, and they now contribute as much as any in many races. Is that correct?
Last year, nationally, they actually put more money into United States elections than George Soros did. So they have become a very large player recently. that was actually kind of exposed. I'm on the Emerging Leaders Council with the Steamboat Institute based out here in Colorado. And Amber Athey is a reporter who has won awards with them in the past. And so she was the one who exposed kind of the national level and why I decided to kind of look more at the local level here in Colorado, because I realized that, okay, this Unite America organization, I thought it was in Washington, D.C., but I realized it's a block from our capital here in Colorado.
Right.
And half of the people who work for them work here in Denver. So it's very much, Colorado is like this petri dish. I know you've probably seen this in like oil and gas. That's what I've seen in oil and gas when I used to work in oil and gas. Is it was kind of like these environmental groups saw Colorado as like a testing ground for testing different strategies to ban oil and gas and put restrictions and stuff like that. And so they're just trying to do the same thing. And I'm trying to wake people up.
And let me just say something too. This is, so people are clear. It's, you know, this is not by accident. The Democrats were the ones who came up with and funded the idea to allow people who are not Republicans to vote in Republican primaries. We had Ted Trimpo, who, by the way, we're going to have on the show Friday. So I'll ask him about this again. But he's a Democrat strategist, talks to Catherine Murdoch. They're like besties, right? In terms of where to invest his race. He was telling us a couple years ago that the strategy that the Democrats have adopted is to recognize that there are some precincts that are Republican precincts, some counties, some local races that are Republican, that they can't win. But what they can do, he said, is influence the Republican primary by basically running what I call fake Republicans funded by Catherine Murdoch. That's her job, is to basically elect people in Republican primaries who are not really Republicans.
Well, and people think they are. Well, that's not fair, at least in Weld County. They are Republicans.
Well,
Barbara Kirkmeyer is a Republican, and Tonya Van Berber is a Republican, and some of the other ones, but they're very weak Republicans.
Yeah, they vote with the Democrats.
Not all the time, but enough of the time that they can get their major legislation passed and called bipartisan. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say, so let's zero in on something that's very important when it comes to like this whole discussion we had last year about taxes and fees. And so when it comes to taxes and fees, Democrats were supposed to not be able to, because the voters passed a law basically saying that like over a certain dollar amount, you can't just call it a fee and get away with it. And so they passed the gas fee, right, which is actually a tax on per gallon of gas that you pay going forward. And so the thing is a Republican sponsored that bill. So that is what this bipartisanship that United America is trying to promote. United America is trying to promote the ability to have a Republican name on a bill. And they're very focused, at least Catherine is very focused on a carbon tax. She wants to be able to have a base of Republicans and Democrats who are willing to work together on a carbon tax or climate change, et cetera. And so that ability to have a Republican sponsor to be able to call it bipartisan. Yes, they're going to try to shove it down our throats, right? Like that gas tax, it didn't go to the vote of the people because they called it a fee, but they could say, well, it was bipartisan.
Well, and here's where I think they have bigger fit.
And who was that Republican sponsor? Do you remember?
I don't remember off the top of my head, but it'd be good to look at it.
And here's something too that I think everyone needs to be aware of, that it's not, it's those, there are issues that are particular to Colorado. But once again, a friend, Ted Trimpo, the Democrat strategist, has acknowledged it can be hard to kind of work on things at a national level. But if they can take over things at a local level, if they can take over county commissioners' races, if they can take over school board races, if they start there, then they can start to accomplish their bigger goals. And you look at what in Colorado, for instance, the legislature passed the Electoral College bill, right, to bring take Colorado out of the, to join the compact to get rid of the Electoral College. They want to pass, I mean, look at what Jenna Griswold and some of the county clerks are doing with election laws. I mean, they don't need to get like, you know, every senator elected or every congressperson elected.
They need to get enough to make it sound bipartisan. And that's what the real, this last session, and you're on the CUT, so you know, this last session, not a single state senator graded out an A. Not a single one. There was no champion in the Senate. Is that right, Carl? Yeah. Not a single one. Not a single, what you'd call a grade A conservative in the entire state Senate from the Republican Party. And in the House, you have a few, but they'll be killed off soon enough. And here's what is so, because I watched Tonya Van Berber's campaign, I forgot who her opponent was. Who's her opponent?
Grady Noose.
Grady Noose, right.
Oh, well, in the primary, yeah, in the primary.
I don't care about the general because that's a big Republican district. Grady Noose, you would have thought she was the biggest Donald Trump fan in the world. They don't run as moderate liberal Republicans. They run as true blue conservatives. Maybe they're not quote-unquote crazy or extreme or whatever else, but they do not run as liberal Republicans. They run as strong conservatives, except they're not. And when they go down to the legislature, they certainly don't act it. And Tonya Van Berber had a fairly bad rating from the Liberty scorecard.
And what's so interesting about that is there's no way they would have been able to get elected without this dark money coming in. Right. And the way that our laws here in Colorado are that allow the dark money, they slap on this name like Coloradans for Constitutional Values, because they know that's the target market they're marketing to.
Yeah.
And so when someone gets in their mailbox, they have no clue. They have no clue that it's money from a New York City liberal who hates Donald Trump, who has funded anti-Trump campaigns, who wants a climate carbon tax. They have no clue. And so unfortunately, like, until we fix that problem with the dark money, we can't really say that we have integrity in these open primaries. So we could have a conversation about whether open primaries are good or not, but we've got to include that fact that you've got to fix the money problem first, or it's just kind of a joke.
Excellent point. And let me get you to expand on that. That's an excellent point, Carl.
Well, how would you solve it? And how it the legislature's not going to solve it, because she's gotten them all elected. So it's going to have to be a initiative, a citizen initiative,
yeah.
And you have to bring it by petition.
It's not solvable, really.
Well, it's solvable, I suppose, but it takes millions to solve. You better have lots of money behind it to get the petition signatures.
You need lots of money to get people to get rid of lots of money.
One question I had about Blueprint 3.0 is, in your graphs and otherwise, you note who the conservatives who lost in the primaries, but you don't have the names of the quote-unquote conservatives, the Murdoch-backed candidates, although you did in earlier drafts, as I looked through. Do you have any particular reason why you left off those Republicans who got elected with Catherine Murdoch's money?
Not really, but I think that it's something that I could definitely build on and just kind of point out that, especially when you're talking about the Senate District 8, Bob Rankin.
Yeah.
Bob Rankin, when it comes to education spending, is willing to approve basically anything that comes across his desk. And so that's what's so important to understand there, is that he possibly could have won anyway without this money, but it's just the fact that he's basically kind of being rewarded for his past voting of going with the Democrats and being that bipartisan senator.
Right.
And so you can say whatever you want to say, whether that's Rhino, Republican light, whatever. I think it just comes down to we don't have, it's other people's money, right?
Right.
And so if somebody is being rewarded for spending too much of someone else's money, that's a problem.
Right. Well, and with the teachers union things.
I want to go to another
area
of particular interest, which I thought was brilliantly highlighted in Blueprint 3.0. It's the way that Kent Theory and others go out and get some very Democratic leaning legislation, very progressive legislation, or initiative, I should say, like the getting rid of Gallagher. And massively increase the taxes. And he and Pat Stryker from the blueprint, the original blueprint, put in about $5 million. But they always hide it by having former Republican officials, Dick Wadhams is maybe the most infamous of them, but same with Hank Brown, same with Dick Owens,
Bill Owens
and the other ones. And he makes it appear, even though 99% of the money is coming from progressive groups, it appears bipartisan.
Yeah, exactly. And so that is what I'm trying to point out with. We've seen that happen in the past. That's what's going to happen in the future. And so we're probably going to see that with this final five voting that they're probably going to try to push down
we'll explain that
on the ballot. So it's really important to understand that there's no grassroots support for the idea of eliminating primaries the way we currently see them completely and just switching to like every voter gets one ballot in the primary and then you get a ranked choice of voting. You choose the top five in the general for like every election, right? And so what happened is in Alaska last year, they spent $1 million to get on the ballot, and Alaska has a very small election, right? Because it's very low population, 300 something thousand people who voted. And they spent $40 per yes vote. They had a margin of like 0.1% that voted in favor of eliminating the traditional primary and switching to a completely, they call it a jungle primary.
Right.
So basically, the Republican Party has no choice in it. The Republican Party can say, like, this person is a Republican or not, right? Because you could be a socialist and say, I'm a Republican in Alaska, right? And increase chances of winning. but it basically takes the control completely away from the Republican Party in Alaska so that they are not running that primary. And then it really becomes, they like to talk about, okay, maybe it helps third parties better. But really, I think it actually makes it easier for this big money again
right.
to make sure that they vote in the favor of business interests.
Well, and let's go over that because I think that's important. It goes back to, again, we were talking about where, you know, they aren't going to try to pass a federal law to say general, you know, jungle primaries.
Yes, they will try.
Well, but not at first. But if they get enough states to pass it, then that's why they're spending this dark money, because you get enough. I'm going to just keep calling them sort of fake swinos, I guess, is what Matt Arnold called or somebody called them, you know, and you get enough of them to vote for this. And so to me, it seems totally clear. All that does is that makes it totally about who has maybe the top two people who have the most money, right? It's yeah. just all about
yeah.
money.
And it makes it so that you're not going to have a good discussion or debate because they're going to be basically trying to get through with the highest amount of name recognition with the lowest amount of conflict with each other. And so it's going to be that like the discussion is limited to that 3x5 card level opinion that the media allows us to talk about, right? Like, you know, when it comes to masks on children in school,
right.
like,
yeah.
you know, oh, what,
exactly.
what age should we do, as opposed to like the real discussion that a healthy discussion would be candidates get up and get to talk about how, hey, some people want masks on all kids all the time. Some people want them never. Some people want, you know, the parents' no. choice. Like, so I just think that we haven't seen the benefit yet, but it's being promoted as, well, Alaska voters voted for this.
Right.
You could too, right?
think how big tech, I mean, if they're censoring us now, for Pete's sakes, they don't let the president of the United States before on Twitter, right? So let's say you're one of the candidates. I'm like, let me ask you about this though. So they do that as another part of the problem too. So it just is the top, it's not necessarily, you know, you have 51%. You could end up, depending on how many people are there, you could end up with way less than a majority and still end up winning.
Well, that's
right?
why you have ranked voting, because then it goes down to you drop off. That's where ranked voting comes in. So eventually
yeah.
you end up with the quote on choice. How do you get on the ballot in Alaska?
Money.
No.
So I'm not sure what the requirements are to get on the primary ballot. So it's possible the primary ballot could end up being pretty cluttered. But then basically they just take the top five winners of that, and then that you end up going on the general election. And then that's where you have this ranked choice voting, which I think my main problem with it is that it sounds great in theory, but it does eliminate the ability to audit by paper ballot. So if you look at, for example, New York City, when they did theirs, they preloaded some test data,
right.
then ran the election in real time with the preloaded test data. And so, of course, then they had to like back it up and go, oh, we made a mistake, right? But just the fact that that it's just machines, and just the fact that you could preload and like, okay, they had the stuff in place to catch it, but it just doesn't build that, like, you want the voter to be able to trust the system.
Right. Not to have somebody else raising their hand.
Well, that's exactly what happened. They forgot to take out the pre-vote, and they counted the pre-vote as being the test vote as being part of the regular election.
Yeah.
which is pretty amazing. Let me go to another one, which is driving me nuts this time, and it's part of the Noah's Ark theory that you put out and some other things. So we have this time the LEAP initiative, which is taking 150, and it could get up as much as $500 million out of control of the legislature anywhere else, put it into a
new bureaucracy.
A bureaucracy run by people appointed by Polis, and then they replace themselves. And once again, who do we have? We have the big money behind this is all Democrats, all progressives. Mm-hmm. But you have approving it, and this money will go overwhelmingly to progressives. And if it doesn't, they'll change it so it does. You have Christy Burton Brown saying this is just great because it's a marijuana tax, and I hate marijuana. You've got Bill Owens saying, "Oh, I love this. I love
it's for the kids.
I love school choice." And you have, oh God, I can't go through. Oh, you got George Brockle. Oh yeah, this is true. I mean, you know, I love George, but did he read the bill? Did he have any idea? Well, of course, did he read his own red flag bill? And I guess not. But we seem to have people who can just be. I understand why Luke Regland did it, because he'll be part of the pig trough that gets money from it. But how do they convince the George Brocklers to sign on to what is blatantly left-wing material?
It's because if you look at that Noah's Ark strategy, because I was just watching that video, I was surprised by it that he said that. But it makes total sense that basically people feel good when they're asked. And so what was happening is in Colorado, Republicans just weren't being asked to support a bill. And so the thing is they realized we're going to get a lot of rejections. But if we keep asking Republicans, it feels good to be asked to support something because you're important, right? And so that's what they've basically done. And Camp Theory has realized is, hey, I got to tailor my pitch to have that conservative kind of leaning message. But if I ask them, I'm going to get some bites. And so that's basically how they get stuff passed. That's kind of how also, like, I think, what is it? Is it Colorado Concern? The organization is involved with,
right,
that both supported Amendment B and then also the gas fee/tax. Right. It's that, like, they try to pretend that they're conservatives and they're just trying to fix the system, and they're going to ask some Republicans, hey, can you support this and come out in favor of this? But really, it's going around the will of the voters. And when it comes to something that's related to education, this LEAP thing, there is no reason why they couldn't have just gone bolder and just said, hey, we want people to have more choice. Because the LEAP thing does not address the foundational issue of parents are tied to a system that at any point in time can change their mind en masse, et cetera, whatever. Parents need to be given choice. And so let's start having that conversation now. This is the year to have that conversation.
Well, because my thing is too, and I think bottom line for people to understand is, as always, it all comes down to money. So when you have the Democrats willing to pour a bunch of money.
Yeah. So that I think is what's so important to get started now on this final five voting. If we're going to think that the Republican Party matters at all, and we don't want the power to completely destroyed, and we don't want dark money to be able to take out people like Lauren Boebert, which they hate with a passion, we've got to start now talking about dark money in Republican primaries. We've got to talk about how we've got to fix that and make sure that can't be in. We've got to get back to this, just getting to meet candidates in person, because what happened with these open primaries that we saw in 2018 and 2020 is you could run a campaign, you could win a campaign without going door to door, shaking hands, without Republican activists being able to actually figure out who is who. And it's a money game. And there's very negative consequences to this. One of the things that I saw in HD 34, which is a House district just close to where I live, and it's Adams County, is they had a candidate who got onto the ballot. He won the primary. But as soon as he won the primary, he called homeschool moms home Hitlers. And so the problem is there needs to be a better way to vet candidates. And what we've been promised is that this open primary system is the way to vet candidates, because you don't have these radical Republicans running. But it takes one example to break the rule. And so the rule of open primaries vets candidates better is not true. We had a Republican candidate who, because he did not end up facing enough Republican activists who could vet him, he was able to get on the ballot and say terrible things at a time when everyone's homeschooling, whether they want to or not, right? Whether you call it homeschooling or not. It's just crazy that the system that we were promised, if you look at the results and the ability for dark money to be in there, you've got to recognize that the system's broken. We've got to put a halt to it. And then we can start talking about what the solution is. We can start preparing for Catherine Murdoch and her organization and game plan on how to defeat that. But we have got to start now talking about the realities as opposed to just hoping things will get better in the future.
Well, we're on the Carl show.
We got losses in there.
I see you guys
Carl, you can take over the podcast. That was beautiful. We could hear it. You were perfect. Awesome.
Well, let me ask you, what would be the fix? What exactly would be the fix that you would advocate?
I think that if people are talking about unaffiliated voters, why not just give unaffiliated voters their own primary?
Yeah.
But how about getting the dark money out? How would you do that?
Oh, that is so complicated. Yeah. It might be good to have Sarah Harrison on because of her involvement in basically exposing dark money in Republican politics and being in that documentary. And so I think it's something that we need to talk about, whether it's basically these independent expenditure committees is the way that Unite America was able to funnel their money. If we eliminated the law that allows for that, that could help a little bit. I don't really feel like I want more laws, but I think that independent expenditure law, if we were to eliminate it, that might. The thing with wealthy people, what I've realized as an accountant, is they figure ways around it because they just hire someone who knows how to figure a way around it. So
they create something else. It'd be called the something.
Well, I spent some time in Italy a long time ago, and they didn't allow private contributions, right? In theory.
Okay.
And that didn't mean that money didn't pour all over the place into the system. So you're right. Rich people want to contribute, as well as labor unions and everyone else. But a system in which they hide who they really are and you have no idea is really, and the more we, you know, most of the, we had one where we limited the and contributions to parties. Well, that just, you know, massively increased labor unions' ability to do independent expenditure committees and other things. So it really is ever since, I mean, John McCain, the system before when was in, it was broken, but still, you know, they were very much for getting $100 contributions. And then John McCain came in with reforms and then the Supreme Court entered. And now we have the worst system I've ever seen where all matters is billionaires. I mean,
yeah,
it's the only thing that matters.
Millionaires don't even count anymore.
No, millionaires don't. Hollywood millionaires don't count anymore.
How could they do this to
Barbara Streisand?
We're just going to go straight to Mark Zuckerberg. Hey, Carl, you have been wonderful. Thank you for carrying on there when we were briefly disconnected too.
And we want to keep in touch with you because we want to talk about specific ones as we go on through the year. But I want to emphasize, everybody, you've got to read Blueprint 3.0 that Carl did with Sarah Harrison. I assume that's former Mrs. Arnold?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Ned Arnold's wife. Okay.
Former wife. and it's just great. So either go to mycoloradogop.org or what's the other one that you
just in? Google Free State Colorado. It's freestatecolorado.com.
Freestatecolorado.com.
All right, and Carl.
What a great amount of research. What a great public service you've had for everybody. So thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Carl.
Have a good one.
You too. Appreciate your time there. And sorry about the glitch. All of a sudden our computer guy
just
connected.
Carl's pretty good.
Carl is great. He's like, I can
slow down.
See, you too can do a podcast. Hey, Mark, I see that you have unmuted yourself. Did you want to weigh in on this or are you just kind of
looking good?
Okay, he's still muted. Okay, so if we want to go ahead and call John Conlon now, we're going to switch gears a little bit, although it all kind of ties in because it all still has to do with money and who's trying to control things and why they're trying to control it. But again, should we promote your debate tomorrow?
Yes, we should. Thank you. We never debate our own stuff. Tomorrow, there'll be three of us, myself, Representative Dave Williams, and Anil Mathai, former chairman of Adams County, faced off against the infamous George Brockler, the infamous Jimmy Sangerberger, and the head of the infamous head of the Douglas County GOP, on the opt out.
Whether is John Caldera going to be doing it too?
No, he'll just be throwing spitballs.
How can people? This is going to be at the Independence Institute.
At the Independence, which is downtown.
Do we know how people can listen?
Yeah, well, I don't know how they can listen. They certainly come and join us at. You just go to Colorado Hispanic GOP, Hispanic Republicans. And
are they the sponsor?
They're the sponsor, and you get a free ticket. They want tickets because of COVID, but you get one. You know, through the computer, and you just print that out and come on down.
So it's called Hispanic GOP,
and Colorado Institute has parking there, and so it's at that time of night. Parking should not be a problem.
No, huh? Well, since Denver is totally in decay, it might be dangerous. No, I'm not kidding. I'm just kidding. It won't be dangerous.
Don't really
parking,
need to go
I have
there,
to say, I have to say, parking has not been a problem in downtown Denver for a while. In fact, actually, right now they've closed Denver Civic Sunny Park because it's too dangerous.
Yeah, the capital and the whole area where all law enforcement and courts are located, including the sheriff's office and everything else.
Denver Police, State Patrol.
It's too dangerous to be in the park.
So it tells you
what kind of government you got.
They've closed it starting today for an indeterminate amount of time while they...
Yeah, just closed down the whole state.
My whole concept would be maybe, I don't know, just call me crazy, start enforcing laws, stop, feeding the birds, as Peter and Boyles would say. And
what does that say, Julie? You got the glasses.
Okay. It says, Colorado Hispanic GOP. This is Dr. Donna. Hey, Dr. Donna, by the way, we love your comments. So you've been doing a great job there. Colorado Hispanic GOP is at a.com. Chuck will find out. Chuck will do the research
there. I'll be checking
there.
While you bring our next guest.
All right. In the meantime, then let's switch gears a little bit here. I want to welcome John Conlon. He's a great author. We have him on the show all the time. And he always is so generous and links me to his latest columns. And he's got a great one up at American Thinker right now. So, John, first, let me just go ahead and say, hey, welcome. And thanks once again for your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, you two.
So you actually, you cannot, in our family life, how pertinent the thrust of your story is how the schools are experimenting on our kids, right? And one of the things that we'll get into masks and the whole thing later, but I just wanted to share with you, I read it and we had just been having a discussion, Chuck and I and myself with some other parents. It was another dad who was asking me about, his son, who's a year behind our son, who's a fifth grader. And we were talking about the fact that all of the kids have their own computers, which, by the way, are Chromebooks, which, by the way, are owned by Google, which, by the way, is basically surveying the kids and tracking them and gathering data on them. But I was explaining, I said, the computer learning, I said, here's the problem I have with it. There's some good things, and Rev, I guess, is learning some things, but with the computer, he doesn't have to get the right answer. I mean, there's no penalty for getting the wrong answer, right? So I quickly learned when he was on remote learning last year, so they'd have to read a little segment, like a paragraph, right? Then they'd have to answer questions about it, about reading comprehension. Well, Rev took him about 5 tries to realize he didn't have to read the paragraph at all. He could just keep hitting it until he got the right question, then the right answer, then he could move on.
That's a bright kid.
I mean, yeah, so he's learning something. And then there were other answers where it'd be like they would have to answer, they'd have to read something about, say, the atmosphere and the different levels that make up the atmosphere. And then they'd have to answer questions about it. Well, and it would be, say, like, the atmosphere I've made up of 5 layers. So then the question would be, how many layers is the atmosphere made up of? All Rev would do would go back and say atmosphere, and he'd cut and paste it, right? So again, you learn to cut and paste. But you raise a good question. What made him decide to do this? They just willy-nilly said, okay, we're going to give all the kids computers and voila, we're off to the races now. And no one has any idea how well it works or doesn't work.
Oh, exactly. Well, and the sad thing is there's just such a lack of testing. You have actual students in your school who weren't using computers last year. This year they are. What the heck? Let's test them at the end of the year and see what the result has been. I mean, that's not a cosmic thought, really.
No. Well, and you raise a good point, and maybe I babbled there for a little bit, and you could go ahead and explain some of the other things, but you said no business would do it this way. No business, if you went in and you were a consultant and said, hey, let's just give everybody la la la, and the business person would probably ask for some kind of evidence that it was going to be effective or, you know, work in some way. But so why are we willing to do this with our kids is a bottom line question, I think, too.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's just blind tests or blind experimentation with ignoring the results. In the article, I talk about also of going to later start times for high schools. There was a huge push for that a couple years back, and most of the public schools bought it hook, line, and sinker. But it's the same thing. I mean, it promised incredible changes in high school. Well, so what are the results? Show me the results, and maybe it was a wonderful thing. I don't think so, but show me the results. Instead, there are no results, and even the annual testing that they do, whatever they're called now, CSATs or whatever, every state does them, they change them on a regular basis, so you don't really have any time analysis that you can do because the test they took last year is different than the test they took this year, which is different than the test they took 5 years ago. So once again, no business would ever do that. I'm an ex-management consultant, so I understand what a consultant would say to a business. And then ultimately, if I came in and helped reorganize a business, the ultimate is going to be when the rubber hits the road and they get their financial statements and they say, hey, the company runs better, it's smoother, and we're making more money. It's pretty cut and dried. Either things were better before Conlin or after Conlin.
Right.
The school should do the same.
Well, and let's go to the whole mask thing, right? Chuck, are you still looking at Chuck's, like, the reason he's trying to find this website? Which you can't find, so we'll figure it out. But I mean, let's talk about the mask mandate, right? I mean, you've got all kinds of different stuff out there, but instead, I mean, there was some emails that were exposed today, basically talking about the teachers' unions negotiating, coordinating with the CDC to make the kids wear masks. Now, science had nothing to do with it. The CDC had already told us, we don't have to wear masks anymore, right? And then the teachers' union jumps in and says, not the kids, though. Kids
follow
don't.
The science the kids and the don't. Pressure groups.
Exactly. And the school said, okay. I mean, that's one of the most ridiculous, but there's no evidence, no studies. I mean, and in fact, the studies that there are seem to indicate that it's not good for the kids.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you will not find an expert who says they can say, without a doubt, this is not harmful to children. They say, we don't think so, maybe it's not, it's probably not. Once again, experiment on somebody else, your kids, not the country's kids. So,
experiment on them.
Definitely get the masks off the damn kids. That's without a doubt.
Well, now we talk then about the equity theory and the critical race theory and things like that. Same thing. We have no idea. I mean, these are major philosophical things that they're throwing at our kids, whether you agree with them or disagree with them. But we have no idea how to teach that at various age levels, how it affects kids. And yet, boom, it's just out there because the teachers want to do it.
Exactly. Well, and as you and I, the three of us, have discussed, the ultimate solution is to give parents 100% control of the money and bring freedom to this marketplace, and then people can choose. Maybe they want to send their kids to where they're going to be masked all day. Maybe they want to go to some place where they teach whatever, transgendered rights or whatever. That's fine. Freedom works all, lets that all work out, but now it's being forced on people, and they consciously tried to hide the results from parents. You know, parents, it's a difficult time to sometimes find out exactly what they're teaching your children, which is kind of scary when you think about it.
It is.
Well, and I think
it
that's what the whole pandemic thing made parents realize, which is why I saw a thing. There's been a massive increase. I think like from 3 to 11% of the kids in school are now being homeschooled. Now, I have two concerns about, not maybe concern is the wrong word. One of the questions I would have about that, though, how many of these kids are kids who frankly aren't being homeschooled, but who have just dropped off the face of the earth and whose parents are like, great, I'm just going to say I'm homeschooling now. I mean, here again, we have no idea what's actually going on, and is it working? Isn't it working? Are these kids being homeschooled? Are they being homeschooled effectively? Are they doing better? Maybe we should all homeschool. I mean, like you said, it's just this whole petri dish laboratory that we just throw our kids in and hope for the best.
Well, and you know, over the past 100 years, is there a single product in the entire country that hasn't been vastly improved? I mean, you know, your car is a marvel of modern engineering, your computer, your phone, I mean, everything. But where's education? You know, where is education? In the article, I had some quotes from the nation's report card, which will make you cry. You know, 20% of 12th graders are proficient in geography. That means 80% aren't. Ooh, 24% are proficient in mathematics. That means 76 aren't. You know, U.S. history. Something that's kind of important, only 12% are proficient, and these are proficient on tests that many claim are dumbed down. So that means 88% of 12th graders don't know crap about U.S. history.
That and what, you know, what they know about American history is crap. So
yeah,
well, that's a good point.
Well, and again, like you say, we would never accept this if it were a business. And I think...
Well, you make a really good point in that in the last 100 years, look at anything and the massive improvements.
Yeah, anything.
And so you would think that one of those things that we would have done better would be education. I mean, it's an extraordinary salute to the teachers union. They've managed to hold us back not only 100 years, because you can go online and try to take some of the tests that required to pass in high school back in 1900 and just see how hard they were. So much of the education, I think, is far worse than it was 100 years ago.
I agree. I had a couple uncles, you know, raised on a farm. You'd go to school through the eighth grade, and then you'd go to work on the farm. So he had an eighth grade education, and he was far better educated than the average high schooler today.
Right. Well, and there's so much, you know, just another thing as a parent who deals with this. So there are a couple of issues I have just even with the computers. I think there are many ways where they're probably really good, but I think you see kids becoming completely reliant on it. Like I said, Rev just, and I blame him. Like I said, it's clever.
That's smart boy. Smart, I mean, that's the way I'm thinking ahead, Rev.
Right, he cuts and pastes stuff and then rearranges it a little bit. So
that's,
it's not
that's
plagiarism.
What lawyers do. That's
but
exactly what
lawyers
he's
going to be a lawyer.
Well, that's very true. And you know, from an educator standpoint or a teacher standpoint too, they love computer tests because the results are a given. You know, teachers don't have to sit at home and grade tests, things long essays and things like that. Those are getting thrown out the window. I forget there's a name for the testing, you know, where, you know, A, B, C, or D. But, you know, just the quality of the testing is going downhill too.
Well, and little things like, for instance, Rev's handwriting. I was talking to this other dad, and he's like, is Rev's handwriting? I'm like, can't read it. I mean, now granted, I can't read my own, but you could when I was in elementary school, because they don't teach, literally, they do not teach handwriting. They don't teach printing. They don't teach. I mean, remember when we were kids?
What do they teach is we haven't yet figured out.
Critical race theory, yeah. I mean, you know, you had the little things where it had little dotted lines and you had to make your A's and stuff. They don't do that at all anymore. And one hand, they don't need to because the kids type. But last year, when Rev and I were trying to type, he had to write a story, right? Okay, well, he was in fourth grade. He's not that fast of a typer. So, I mean, he was kind of, it's like, should we just narrate it into the thing? I mean, it's all.
What the nice part about it is they don't really have extensive typing classes either.
No.
And you kind of go, why not? Well, that's, you know, they'll learn that. You're kind of like, what do you mean? That's what you do in school.
I forget where I read it, but it's a sad reality, too, that in a short period of time, we're going to be graduating people from our high schools that can't read the founding documents of this country.
Yeah.
Not in their original form. They cannot read them. It'll be like me trying to read French.
Right. Well, yeah, when I was at the TV station, this is 5 years ago, there were kids coming out who were working at the station who couldn't, they called it cursive. I mean, they said they can't read it. And they can, right. Not only can they not write it, but they can't read it. I'm like, what do you mean you can't read cursive? I'm like, it's not that different. They're like, I've never saw it before.
Thing is, I think you could go pick almost any average person on the street of average intelligence, give them 12 years with a group of students to teach them to read, to teach them to write, to teach them some science, and they would do a better job than the public schools are doing right now.
Have to realize that in colonial times, you know, they went to the Harvards and the colleges of the time when they were 14 and 15 years old. Yeah. And they were graduating from college by 18 and 19, and those are people like Jefferson, who are, you know, enormously well-educated, and people were enormously well-educated. Sometimes, you know, if you give somebody the time period to learn something, then they'll learn it in that time period. So we've decided, okay, we'll stretch it out to K through 12, and we hope at the end of that mishmash that you can read, write, and do some minimal mathematics, but maybe that's too ambitious.
Modern colleges, only 40% of all incoming students will graduate within a 6-year time frame. That's kind of scary, although it does pump up the college's financial statement.
Is all we care about.
Right. I graduated in 3 years. I remember when Jenny went to college, it's like, yeah, average is 5. I'm like, 5? But let me ask you about this, too, though, back to the lack of testing and little things like the handwriting, though. Somewhere along the line, somebody just decided we're not going to teach kids handwriting anymore or printing, and we're not going to teach them to type. And in terms of homework, so when Rev is in first and second grade, he had homework. In third grade, they're like, well, there are new studies. I'm like, what studies? And now we don't do homework anymore.
Yay!
It's like, where did – and it's just like you said, somebody somewhere is just making this
– some whack goofball back in
right.
And Middlebury, Vermont says, no homework anymore. I hated homework, and let's get rid of it.
It's, we should expect and demand better. I mean, it's just, like I said, and this is just, you know, a small sample. You know, in the article I talk about, you know, the schools decided somehow people needed help with sex and procreation because somehow over millions of years people never could figure out how to do that stuff. So they started, you know, sex training, or they call it education. Have they ever checked the results of that? You know, they had DARE programs, you know, the anti-drug one. There were studies done, valid studies that found that kids who went through the DARE program were actually slightly more likely to use drugs than those who didn't. Right. But they continued with the DARE program.
Right, right. Well, I know.
Well, because a lot of off-duty police officers made a lot of money off the DARE program. And there's nothing worse than separating a police officer from overtime if it's not getting him indicted.
Well, you know, and I think, John, Because we only have a couple minutes left. I think though you hit it on the head that the one way to solve all of this is to put control. And of course, it won't happen because of the teachers' unions. If they're making Joe Biden say everybody has to wear a mask, you know, God knows what they'd say about school choice. But that seems to me to be where it comes down, because as a parent, you can look and say, well, wait a minute, this isn't working. And you can see, I wonder if there's a school that actually has teachers teach instead of Chromebooks, things like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you could, well, with freedom, you don't have these arguments with freedom, right? Because yeah. You can do your thing and I can do mine, and I don't have to try to scream at you that yours is right or wrong and mine is right. You just do your thing. You drink this beer, I drink another beer. We're both happy, you know?
Right.
And down the road, maybe we can see what the results. Maybe one side is better than the other. Maybe one side does get better results than the other. But freedom is what solves the problem. But if we're not going to have freedom, then damn it, let's quit blindly experimenting on kids and let's start getting results like any other industry would do. You wouldn't go change the way you plant your crops and never check, well, what did it do to the yield? You know, what did it cost me per pound, per bushel, whatever?
You know,
they
actually did that in the Soviet Union in the 1920s. They had a guy, he said, I know I can grow winter wheat. It's absolutely, they said, well, do you have any? He says, no, just, you know, granular. And so they have a whole program and so forth. And of course, he couldn't grow winter wheat, so 20 million people died. But, you know, it's just, oh, well, you know, no reason. Exactly.
At least they quit doing it.
Yeah.
It sounded good at the time.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the scary thing to me. The fact that Google keeps handing kids the Chromebooks shows that, I mean, Google doesn't do anything out of the goodness of its heart.
There is no heart at the heart of Google.
I mean, that means they can, the one thing they're getting their money's worth out of it in some way, shape, or form, or they wouldn't be doing it. And, you know, they're doing testing and they're measuring results and they're like, hey,
they're screwing you over and your children and your country and everything else. But hooray!
Anyone that's you know made it to halfway adulthood knows nothing's ever free. There's always a reason. Now maybe I'm going to give you a sales pitch. Maybe you know whatever, but nothing's free. So yes, you were exactly right with Google.
I did want to get this on our program today, just somewhere. So the U.S. State Department announced today they are shocked. Oh. They are shocked that the Taliban government is made up of all white men. It's all white guys. It's all Caucasian, Pashtun white guys. And they go, well, you can't do that. And if we'd known you were going to do that, maybe we would have bombed you back to the Stone Age.
Hey, John, where are people can find you at this current column is at American Thinker. Where else can people find you and read you?
They can find me at eicenterprises.org. Or just search for my name, John Conlon. I'm pretty easy to find.
All right. Great to talk to you, John. Yeah. Always enjoy.
Yeah, thank you for your column. It was a great column. We need to pay attention there. Thank you. Appreciate your day. I appreciate your time.
Thanks for the effort. You two hang in there.
Okay.
All right. We will try to figure out and then put out on social media where you need to get tickets. It might be at the Independence Institute, too. If you were to go to their website, they might be promoting it. Yeah, we'll promote that. Hey, that'll do it for us. Friday, we have Ted Trimpa.
Oh, you don't want to miss that. No. He'll be describing how they're going to do Blueprint 3.0. if you think 2.0 was bad, what do they do 3.0?
Well, I'm sure he's working on it. What the heck is with Joe Biden these days? Who is he always supposed to be?
Well, that's the other good sign, everybody. Go to your local football game and start the F and Joe Biden. That's one of the most encouraging signs in American culture in a long time.
Might increase ticket sales too. Hey, yeah. That'll do it for us today. Thank you to John. Thank you to Carl. Check his column out too at mycoloradogop.org. We'll bring you the results of the debate on Friday as well. And we'll see you then.
Take care.